T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Right now on the screen, I'm watching a story Fox has been doing on the battle over historical monuments. You know, and it's really sad. It's quite unfortunate that so much attention is focused on these monuments. It's really crazy. You know, what difference is this going to make, one way or the other, in the lives of people who may have had issues in this country from discrimination or whatever it is? What effect does it have to remove a statue? You know, this is where people's heads are. Symbolism over substance. This is the unfortunate place we find ourselves. As you know, we've got ongoing concerns, increased concerns about the coronavirus. And there's some bizarre things going on. People do some really silly stuff, especially when you talk about younger people. Case in point, when I saw this story, I just thought these people have completely lost their minds. Students in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who've been diagnosed with COVID-19, have been attending parties in the city and surrounding area as part of a disturbing contest to see who can catch the virus first. This is serious. People have actually been doing this. COVID parties as a game to intentionally infect each other with contagion. It's already killed 127,000 people in the United States. And this particular city council person recently learned of this behavior, informed the city council of the parties that are going on in the city. They put money in a pot and they try to get COVID. Whoever gets COVID first gets the pot. You really have to be out of your mind to play a game like this. And no one is going to more emphatically say this than our next guest. I had a conversation with him the other day, and he shared some of his story, and I thought, you know, I think this is the kind of thing that we need to hear, because so many times this conversation can be very sterile. We're talking about numbers, we're talking about the economy, we're talking about all kinds of things, but what does it really look like to actually deal with this thing firsthand? Ed Dossey is on the phone, and he is going to share his story about contracting the virus and his journey. Good morning, Ed. How you doing, man?
Hi, I'm good, actually. Hey, Vince.
Well, first off, tell us about how this misadventure started for you back in March, I believe.
Yeah, I worked for an airline, and they were telling us in March on the news and everywhere else that it was a light flu. And I was like, oh, that's nothing. You know, I'm, 33, and, you know, I'm a fairly healthy guy. And I met a person who worked for the CDC on one of my flights. And I said, what do you know about COVID or Corona at that time? And she was like, oh, it's only affecting elderly people and, you know, you should be fine. So with that, I mean, with the CDC, her name is Jill. Hi, Jill, whoever you are. I went to Europe like a couple of days later because I was like, I'll be fine, right near Italy. I got COVID about 3 days later, and it was not fun. It was because they were telling us it was a light flu, and I wasn't worried about that, you know. It was worse than a light flu, and I got home and I had to self-quarantine for 14 days, but it turned out to be much longer, and it was really hard to get tested because in March, like literally literally, like, the day I got it, about a day later, Trump came out on the news and was like, it's a pandemic. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding? Like, I think that they knew that it was worse than a light flu, and they didn't tell us early on. And it was,
well, tell me, what was the first hint that something was wrong, Ed?
How real can I be right now?
Well, as long as you don't use any of the language that is banned by the FCC. But that's the point. I want people to understand this in all of its ugliness. So
I fly for a living, sometimes up to like 4 flights a day. And when you fly back from Europe, sometimes you're really jet lagged. You get really, like, you're really tired. So I thought it was BS. And then the first day I was back, I was kind of rough. And I was staying in the hotel because I was like, I'll be right by the airport. It'd be nice. And I was kind of rough. The next day was so bad that I called 911, and 911 would not come. They're like, listen, we don't know about this virus. We don't know what's going on. And I was like, what? And then that's when I got in contact with the CDC, the DHEC, and DHEC finally.
Now, you were saying that you wanted to describe what was taking place. Go ahead and give us detail about the symptoms you're experiencing.
By day three, I literally, one of my best friends got HIV, and he told me it was like the worst flu you ever have. He said it's like you feel like you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you have upset stomach both ways and stuff. And that's what it felt like. It felt like the worst flu you've ever had in your life. Like, literally, it felt like I woke up and I just knew my body. I knew something was wrong with my body. And it wasn't like a light flu. It wasn't like the flu. It was like the flu and mono and food poisoning and everything all together. Like the first early sign, I only had a fever for one day. The fever was 110 for one day, like 101, excuse me. And, the rest of the time, it was just upset stomach both ways. You have upset stomach constantly for like a day or two. And then it really did. It kind of went away for a couple of days. And I thought, oh, well, that wasn't bad. Okay, that was nothing. And then about by day eight, I felt, you know, not that bad. I was sleeping a lot, like sleeping. But on day eight, suddenly it was like I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe out of my nose. I couldn't breathe. I could not catch my breath. The only thing that really helped, my mom has COPD. My mom's like a polio survivor, and she's a smoker, and she had mold poisoning, and so she has like all kinds of rescue inhalers. These rescue inhalers are like $400 a piece. Grand Stern Hospital did not give me one. My mother gave me one of her extra inhalers and was like, you don't need this, Shug. And I was like, thanks. And it saved my life. I used it like 4 and 5 times a day. You're only supposed to use it like twice a day. I used it like up to 6 times one day.
Wow.
Like I couldn't catch my breath. I was trying to do everything I could do. Like, I was Googling, trying to figure out, because the hospital had no treatment. They couldn't tell me. They were like, get some NyQuil, you know, good luck. Like, then they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't keep me. They didn't want me there. And I knew I couldn't afford like a 14-day hospital stay, you know, even with insurance. Like, I can't come back from that. And it was not fun. It was just, not just that, like, you know, at that point, in March, no one knew what it was. I was basically an alien. When I came in, when I had to finally go into the hospital to get treated, to get tested, they treated me like I was an alien. They put me in this, like, dirty little emergency surgery room. They came in, two young doctors and a young nurse, dressed like I was radioactive. And they, like, shoved this thing up my nose and, you know, you, like, shove it way up. And they do both of your nostrils and you're, like, you know, then I put my little mask back on, and, you know, they were really scared. Everyone was completely scared of me, like I was radioactive for March, April, up until May.
Wow. We're talking with Ed Dossie, who is a person who has survived COVID-19. We're going to continue this conversation after the break. Stay with us. Continuing now our discussion with Ed Dossie Jr., he contracted, unfortunately, COVID-19 back in March, and you were telling us about your experience, the sickness, and how you were dealt with by those healthcare workers who had to be very, very careful with you, and they deal with this with multiple people. How long were you in the hospital, Ed?
The hospital would not allow me to come in. Like, I called several times. So, basically, I was in Europe. My mom called me and she goes, "Honey, Trump's closing borders. Come home." And I was like, "What?" And then I turn on the news, and then it's like breaking news. Like, they've been telling us, and there's a lot of people before we knew we were essential workers or anything like that, that were like exposed. Like, not just healthcare workers, but there were so many people that were exposed to this, you know, in service industry, things like that. And so I came home, and then when I landed in New York, I called my mom. I was like, "Hey, I'm back in America," and she was like, "Yeah, you got to self-quarantine for 14 days. And I was like, "What? That's ridiculous." And then 3 days later, I knew something was wrong. And I started trying, like I said, I called 911. 911 would not come and get me because it was a day or two after. It was literally like President Trump came out of the closet and was like, "Hey, it's not just a light flu. Hey, it's really bad." Like,
And you found that this was pretty serious business. Because at some point you mentioned going into the hospital and how carefully they were dealing with you.
They treated me like I was radioactive.
So
like,
did you get sent home at that point?
They didn't want to take me. I had to end up, I called 911. I called three local hospitals. And then finally, I called the CDC because I'd gotten in contact with them. I think maybe someone else on that flight home had COVID. And the CDC called me, and she was like, "Edward, if COVID-19 was not running rampant, if you were this sick as you are, what would you do?" And I was like, I would go to the doctor. She's like, "That's what you're going to do." She's like, "You're going to put a shirt over your face, like a mask, and you're going to go in there, and you're going to tell them that you need a nasogeek swab. If they have any questions, call me, dude, at the CDC." I'm like, "Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am." So I put a shirt over my face, like, you know, like I'm a bandit or something. And I went in and I said, I'm a flight attendant. I've been exposed to COVID-19 and I need to be tested. But like I said, I called three times before I even went in, and they were like, "Please don't come in. Please." They did not want me in their waiting room. The lady was like, "We don't have tests here. We don't have, we don't have treatment." She's like, "We don't know." She's like, "We have sick people. We have pregnant people. We don't want you in our waiting room." Like, she's like, "Please." And I'm like, but that's when I called the CDC, and CDC said, "Ignore her and go in there." Like, she's like, "I don't care what that lady said."
Wow.
And so I went in, and like I said, immediately when I went in, they took me to like, kind of like where you go if like their family's going to tell you that your loved one died in surgery or whatever, this little room. And then they put me in like an emergency surgery room that was dirty, that had blood in it. It was like the size of a bathroom stall, and I sat there for 2 hours, and then people came in dressed in full suits, full gear, head to toe, and they shoved something in my nose. Then they wouldn't even allow me to touch the doorknob. And I was wearing masks and gloves. I was very good about PPE the whole time. I was very good about the CDC. The lady actually thanked me. Her name's Sarah. She was like, "Thank you so much for socially distancing. Thank you for getting that hotel room. And, you know, you limited your contact so much. You probably saved so many people." And I'm like, it wasn't me. My mom totally was like on the ball the whole time.
Yep, I hear you. Ed, how long did you have a COVID-19? How long did the main symptoms stay with you?
Over a month. Like, it was literally almost 2 months. Like, the tiredness only lasted a month. You literally are tired, like you have mono. I don't know. It's different for some people. That's what's so awful about this. Some people get it like a flu like me. Some people get it, have absolutely no symptoms. They're asymptomatic. And that's what the kicker is. The asymptomatic people are out there twirling around, licking doorknobs, going down water slides, you know, getting other people sick. And then some people die. Some people literally, I'm talking, like, I got into an argument with somebody on Facebook because they're like, your immune system was already compromised, blah, blah. And I was like, there are pro athletes who have died. Like, there was like a, you know, there was like that whole family that died from going to a wedding. Like, I was like, I'm not anything special, and I was not sick at the time. I don't have any underlying health issues, and I got really, really sick, and that's what's so annoying. Some people don't get sick at all. Some people have it, and they don't even know they have it. Like, they don't have a temperature or anything, and then some people get it, and they die within 3 days, and that's what irks me, because people are out there, like you said, having COVID parties and flaunting, social distancing rules. Well, okay, that's fine. You know, do that, and then you could die within 3 days. Like, it literally, it's not a joke. It's serious business.
There's no question about this. I want to ask you, what are you experiencing now? Is there any long-lasting effect that this still has? This was back in March when it kicked in. What happens now? How do you feel now?
I get winded really easily. I get tired all the time. I feel like I've smoked for 20 years, and I've never smoked in my life. Like, I get winded. I get out of breath, tired. I don't know if I should say it. You know, as a man, whenever we're doing manly things and you want to be, it's hard for me sometimes to perform like task of strength. I get out of breath, or I get, you know, it's like physically, whenever you can't do what you could do 2 months ago or 3 months ago, you get like angry at yourself. You're like, I could move this whole damn room full of furniture. Why am I so weak?
And what are the doctors saying? Are they telling you that this is eventually going to wear off, or are you concerned this is something you may have to carry the rest of your life?
I joined a gym, and I'm trying to start working out. I never really was a big like gym guy. We have gyms in our hotels with my job, and I would go once in a while, you know. But I'm trying to build my strength back up with the gym, because I feel like if I don't, I'm just going to get, you know, I'm going to be like a, you know, like my mom who's like a COPD patient, you know, like I get out of breath really easily. Like I literally mopped like the living room floor, which is not big. It's, you know, like 16 by 20. And I got out of breath. I was like,
wow, that's pretty serious stuff. Well, we certainly want to wish you best of luck in your recovery, Ed, and hope everything turns out well long-term. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, man.
Vince, thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything, Vince. It was nerve-wracking. Another really quick tidbit. People accuse me of not having it. So basically, the third day, on the fifth day, when this was brand new, they sent me a warrant to where I was at, a warrant of isolation. That says,
right.
You can't leave your address. You can't. If you leave, you'll be considered a felon. You'll be, you know, 30 days in jail, $1,000 fine. It was frightening. I started crying. But then when I got better and I started trying to go back out in public or say things, people literally in South Carolina where I live accused me of lying and saying that, like, COVID-19 is not real and it's part of, like, a liberal agenda or something.
Oh,
and
my
like,
goodness.
What? Are you kidding me? Like,
wrong person to tell that to. Wrong person.
Thing, people. It is a real thing. If you don't believe me, it's on my Instagram. It's on my Facebook. Look it up. And I just want to give a shout out to my mom. Thank you, Mom, for making me socially distant. Thank you for getting me the hotel room so that I would have somewhere to stay and not be around people.
Well, absolutely. We're glad you're at least on the track for recovery. Ed Dossie, thanks a lot for coming on the broadcast today. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Ed on this program is I need to move this conversation sometimes away from the theoretical and the numbers onto the personal to understand what this really looks like and also feels like. Love to get your thoughts as we continue the broadcast. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hopkins reporting. The U.S. registering more than 52,000 new COVID-19 cases in 24 hours. This happened on Wednesday. A new one-day record. We've got infections surging around the country. To be exact, 52,898. Bringing the total cases in the United States to 2,682,270. The total fatalities on that day, 706. Now the total, 128,028. So again, something to take seriously. And I just wanted a fresh reminder, as I think it's necessary for us, that we're not just talking about numbers here. We're talking about people. We're talking about real fatalities, real illnesses, and lingering illnesses. I had a story, and I'm not going to share this today, talking about some of these same things, people with lingering health effects that continue even after the person, quote, recovers. So this is something very serious to consider. We talked earlier about the end of this whatever zone, whatever name you want to come up for it, use for it out in Seattle. And this is part of the ongoing effort by the left, which is attempting to defund police. Did you see they cut $1 billion out of the budget in New York City? I mean, who wants to live in some of these places with the idiocy that you see on display? And all of this has come about with a goal of protecting you? Of course not. Is this about black lives? No. Has nothing to do with it. This is a political agenda. That's what's going on here. Let's go out to Stan in Charlotte. Good morning.
Hey, Vince. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, sir.
I have a solution here. I want to go just with you. When they talk about getting rid of the $1 billion in the New York Police Department, what they really want to do is they want to transfer that to social spending. That's their goal.
Yep, and that's exactly what they're doing with it.
Still there, Vince?
That's exactly what they're doing with it, Stan.
Well, and I have a solution, then. If they can do that, then why don't we just abolish the social welfare system and replace it with where private charities administer it and people get tax incentives to donate to them? That removes the bureaucrats off the payroll. And I will guarantee you they would put different restrictions on those businesses by how much of their money had to go to intended recipients than what they do themselves. And then let's give businesses tax incentives to hire those workers. Because people
here,
here's the thing. There's nothing that can be consumed that occurs that way naturally, where you need it, when you need it. People do it. And if you're not doing your part, then somebody else is doing it for you. Right now there are 59 million people getting benefits from the government that are able to be productive, and they're not. And that's a big problem. So let's get as radical as they are, and let's just put signs everywhere that say abolish the social welfare system.
All right. If you can find politicians that are brave enough to do something like that, then please let me know. Let's go out to the sprawling metropolis of Kings Mountain, and Mark joins us. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. An earlier caller talked about the riots where Germans were murdered.
Right, and he had some interesting figures he was sharing, didn't he?
There were a few during World War One.
Right.
American History Magazine ran an article on this recently, but there were only about four or five. There was not that large a mass murder of Germans.
Right, right. And you probably noticed that we, for very good reasons, put some appropriate music under that when we were discussing that earlier. So it's kind of reminiscent of a particular program, except maybe with less credibility. We'll just put it that way. Let's go next here to, let's try Gastonia and Will. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. Thanks for hearing me. I was listening to your caller a bit ago who was talking about having the COVID diagnosis and their experience. I was sick in January, same symptoms, and did not feel well in myself. I was in bed for 3 weeks with pneumonia and told my wife if I died, it would be okay. But by the middle of March or so, maybe 3 months later, just getting my breath, same thing, couldn't carry a book bag across the house without getting winded. and still can feel it in my chest while I'm talking to you now almost 6 months later. But my perspective is a little bit different about it. I told my wife a few weeks ago, I said, if I could get my life back to normal, I would get sick like that again. And a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy, but I don't think it's a binary issue. I don't think that you can solve it with a simple thing to say like that. Hey, let's just be crazy and go out and breathe on each other. But my biggest thing with this is fear. And I think that God doesn't want us to be afraid, and there's a lot of fear in the world right now. And I'd just like to share with people that, you know, people do get sick in the 6,000 years of humanity or whatever. It happens, and it happened to me, and it gave me a perspective on my life and my faith, and it's that things happen. Bad things happen to good people. So I just want to throw that out there.
Hey, well, I appreciate you sharing that, and wish you the best as you continue on the road to complete recovery. Let us go next, let's see, to Tom in Charlotte. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Got about a minute here.
Okay. I got 2 points to make. One, I'm glad there is a spike in the COVID. Reason number one is the flu has gone away during the summer, and then it will come back in the fall and the winter. So if we can get a lot of these cases out of the way when we have plenty of hospital beds and whatever. The second reason I'm glad it's happening is because we're getting a big pool of antivirus or the antibodies out there, the serum that can be used later in the winter when there's another spike. That's what I wanted to say.
Hey, well, I appreciate you sharing that. And this is something that's been talked about for some time, Tom, that the idea of building a herd immunity. And the question is when we actually reach that point. Mitchell, I think you have a very brief point. If you can do it in 15 seconds, that would be awesome. Take it away, Mitchell.
I'm just wondering, how crazy can people be to think that this is a joke? I mean, COVID is not a joke. I've got two people that live across from me that have it, and one's in the hospital on a ventilator.
I hear you, and I think a message you're trying to communicate it is please wear your mask. Great idea.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.